where the trees have leaves of prisms, break the line in colors. No one knows the names of.
Community Radio is radio for the people, by the people. At KBOO, your neighbors, coworkers, and friends make radio so you can be sure that the issues they bring to you are the issues that matter. We believe strong communities invest in sharing knowledge with each other. Every month, KBOO offers free classes in the art of radio broadcasting so Portland can stay informed. Invest in future media makers and join us on Kickstarter today. Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter. And thank you for your support of KBOO.
Do you have questions about KBOO's Kickstarter campaign? What's a Kickstarter, you ask? We are doing this campaign instead of a membership drive. It's an all-or-nothing campaign, which means if we don't raise the full $20,000 by March 9th, we have to send the donations back. Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter to donate. We will be having a live interactive video on Wednesday, February 21st at high noon, so check us out and get all your questions answered at kboo.fm/Kickstarter.
Where the trees have leaves of prisms, break the line in colors. No one knows.
The time is 6 p.m. You are listening to KBOO Portland. It's time for Labor Radio.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Time is now 6 p.m. and you're listening to Labor Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm your host, Nick Bubb, and with me is...
Michael Cathcart.
Mike, how are you?
Doing great, Nick. How are you doing today?
You know, I'm really excited to be back in the studio. Last month, we were preempted by a special.
Yes, indeed. Martin Luther King Day.
Martin Luther King Day. And the year before that, we had our own special. And so we got to share the wealth this time. Someone else got to talk about it.
Yes, indeed.
But Dr. King, of course, a great civil rights leader, lesser known for being a fantastic labor and working class leader.
Yeah, one thing that I think the past few, and obviously it's a month out now, but... Well, the past few Martin Luther King days, I think, has become more and more prominent in the social discussion about his legacy is sort of the things that have gotten cut out. Obviously, we discuss all the time about how he, you know, if you go to his monument in D.C., you basically see the image of a man who was in favor of just general peace. Mm-hmm. And goodwill towards everyone. Mm-hmm. But they don't discuss the more political aspects or the more sort of radical aspects of his history, specifically as you get towards the later part of his life before his death. He really became a lot more radicalized and did discuss things, you know, pertaining to, like, he became a staunch anti-war advocate, and he was, you know, very much in favor of organizing workers and poor people to get their day in front of Congress and to get their rights heard by our leaders. And
yes,
that's sort of the moment that people seem to cut out of his life and his legacy often.
You know, it's funny, at our union, we just had a poll put on Facebook. Should we add Martin Luther King Day as one of our holidays? Now, we don't get any paid holidays, so another holiday means another unpaid day.
Right.
So the majority of people said no, because they don't want to miss more time. But everybody in the comments that posted, you know, have great respect for Dr. King, and I myself, I'd like to have the day off. We got all our holidays seem to come in the last 6 months of the year, and I think we have one in the first half of the year, so spread the love and celebrate a great labor leader, I say.
Especially if, like, I mean, not everyone, you know, in the same way that not everyone takes Martin Luther King Day off, a lot of people do take Columbus Day off, and it's arguable that, I mean,
still,
that should not be a day that anyone is celebrating legacy of Columbus, but we should have time to celebrate the legacy of Martin Luther King.
So, coming up in the show today, we got a lot of interesting things to talk about.
Yes,
one
indeed.
Is a very, very important Supreme Court case. This is Janus v. Ask Me. This determines a union's right to collect dues, or rather, a worker's right to not pay dues.
Yeah.
We also have some other articles, and if we get time, we're going to talk about the Trump administration allowing bosses to keep their workers' pooled tips.
Boo.
Boo.
Boo to that.
We're going to talk about, under the new tax plan, tax scam, Walmart and other big companies distract the public with wage increases and bonuses. Meanwhile, they're cutting labor, you know, laying workers off, and closing facilities altogether.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about Amazon's new convenience store, Amazon Go, where you have no checkout line.
It's very interesting, a new model.
And anyways, back to Dr. King real quick. One of his favorite quotes that I've read is, we have capitalism for the poor and socialism for the rich.
It's so true. And that's one of the, it's funny that you mentioned that, because it's one of those quotes that I think gets attributed to a lot of different people. But yeah, I believe it was originally a Martin Luther King quote. And it's absolutely true. You see that more and more every single day, too, that the poor are left to fend for themselves, and it's, you know, survival of the fittest. And yet, for the people who have the most, who have everything, and who not only have all the wealth but also have all the power,
you're too big to fail.
Exactly. They are, there is a social safety net put in place for them, while at the same time it's being eroded for the people who truly do need a safety net of that sort.
Yeah, that's right. They say too big to fail, and they leave out what's implied as you're too small to succeed.
Yeah, which, that's the flip side of it. You never hear. Yeah,
it is. I know it's and it's brutal, but
that's good.
Speaking of socialism for the rich and capitalism for the poor, we've got this Janus v. Ask Me case, and you know, unions just represent people the same way that a government represents people. You even have elected officials in the unions to represent you, to represent your interests, to make rules that are supposed to, anyways, benefit everyone.
Right.
But now you have workers claiming that they don't want to support the politics of the union, and so they don't want to pay into it. And I think a lot of this actually comes from what we do to ourselves. We get union leaders who are elected, and then they make different rules for themselves. And this is true in my union. If you're an elected officer, you get an officer's pension, and it pays out substantially better than the retirement that the rank and file members get.
Yeah.
You get a higher scale of pay. You have a steady workplace where you're working, at least your home base is inside a warm, clean environment.
Yeah, you actually have an office and a desk.
Right.
You're not out in the field.
Right, yeah. Now the better ones, the agents will go out and they'll visit job sites, and they're out there getting cold and talking with the workers and seeing what needs to be done and actually improving conditions.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not always the case. And in those situations, they make different rules and different standards for themselves. So, anyways, that kind of thing kind of creates some animosity among the people, and you'll hear comments like, I don't know what the union has ever done for me,
right.
but they forget, because they don't teach us in school that before the union, we didn't have a 5-day work week,
right.
We didn't have a 40-hour work week.
Kids were working, you know, there were no child labor laws, there was no, there were no safety,
there was no OSHA
regulations, exactly.
Right.
I feel like that, I mean, that just gets cut out, again, so often from the history of our workplaces and our culture here in this country.
Right.
The history that unions really did, the blood, sweat, and tears that were put in to get us the standards that we live at now, and how quickly those are being eroded because union membership and union strength is at an all-time low, and the understanding of what unions provide and the general feeling towards union and unions and unionized workers is definitely declining as well.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, it's just something that we really need to educate people on, because we still do a lot of things, and you know, unions are still advocating for things like paid sick time, paid family leave. There's just a lot of pushback. A lot of people with a lot of money have a vested interest in preventing us from getting those things. And then, you know, sometimes we're our own worst enemies. We'll have members who are just exceptional human beings that don't ever take a sick day. You know, maybe they never get sick. I don't know. Yeah, just some amazing people. And those people will reiterate things like, well, if you're not going to show up, I don't think you should get paid. But you really have to look at things in terms of, you know, what's the rest of the world doing? And communist China gives their people 30 paid sick days a year. Now, do they actually take those 30 sick days? I have no idea. Maybe they don't, but maybe they do. But the law stipulates that they can.
Yeah, they don't live under fear of thinking, if I get sick and I'm sick for more than, you know, 3 days or 5 days or 7 days, I'm not going to be covered.
Yeah, you know, how am I going to pay the rent?
Exactly, yeah. It's really interesting to me that, I mean, just talking specifically on sick pay and things mm-hmm. like that, if you talk to workers, even though there may be the one or two out there that do express that sentiment of like, well, you know, I don't get sick, so why should anyone else have this protection if I have all these extra days?
Right.
But if you really do break it down and you sit down and talk to most people, most workers, they will agree, like, yeah, of course there should be protections for that. And yet, when you actually look at the efforts to push back, like right now in Austin, Texas, there is the city council is largely supporting a measure to provide paid sick leave for not only government workers, but for workers in general in that city. And, you know, that's supported largely by most of the people who live there. The people who are not supporting it, the campaign against it, you know, if you actually look at where the funding is coming from, just like almost any other attack on workers' rights or any sort of protections, it's coming from a Koch brother-funded entity. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, like largely, you know, you have this political rhetoric that surrounds these issues mm-hmm. that if you can break through that and talk to the individual, they will generally agree, like, yeah, obviously people need protections. And I agree with that, even though if I don't need it, I agree that someone else may need it and therefore it should be there. But the rhetoric is built up and supported and fueled and funded by these billionaire-backed organizations, these, you know, dark money secretive groups that largely dictate the narratives that surround all of our political ideas right now.
Mike, I tell you what, man, this got my wheels turning, because like you hear a lot of rich people saying, you know what, before I die, I'm going to give away all my riches, you know, and yet a lot of rich people have just spent money lobbying under this new tax plan to just undo the estate tax altogether.
Oh, yeah.
Which a lot of people object to the estate tax. You know what, I've already paid taxes on this money. I'd like to be able to leave what I have left over to my children, and I get that. But there was an exclusion for millions of dollars, and I can't remember the exact amount, but I want to say for a married couple, it's like $12 million. And if your inheritance was less than that, you didn't pay any.
Right.
You didn't pay any taxes at all. If it was over $12 million, you'd pay.
Yeah, I mean, that's
only
the thing.
Only on the amount that exceeded that threshold.
Exactly. I mean, like the estate tax, for as much as there's, you know, that rhetoric around, oh, it's a death tax, and you know, you as a truck driver really need to be worried about this, it doesn't affect anyone other than the ultra rich. And so it's a little bit of a silly argument to have anywhere other than in, you know, when you're talking about very rich people.
Right.
It doesn't apply to the average Republican voter, the average worker.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and then the rich people that say they're going to give all their money away. Do you ever wonder where it goes? Like when they donate money, what happens to this money? Because some people will say, well, you know, they're doing a lot of research to make medical breakthroughs. Well, think of one modern medical treatment or one modern medicine that's saving lives that you don't have to pay more than you can afford to get.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because all the rich pharmaceutical companies are claiming they're doing the research on it. So I've started thinking, you know, I got my eyes on this now. Like, what are these nonprofit organizations that are receiving billions of dollars? What are they really doing? And then I started looking at the number of people that are filing amicus briefs in the Supreme Court case. And we have people, you know, these something like 75 nonprofit organizations saying that they've got a vested interest in Janus v. Ask Me.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to wonder, is this where the donated money is going? Because if that's the case, you know, we're just subsidizing them by giving them tax breaks on this stuff.
Yeah, it's completely true. I mean, I think as much as, you know, they may not highlight it, oftentimes the money that any rich person like that would give away, it probably goes into groups like the Heritage Foundation and other sorts of, you know, secretive foundations that then perpetuate these political narratives that continue to fight against worker protection. So even after their passing, their money is still going towards the fight that they were engaged in when they were alive.
Right. So for those of you who don't know what Janus v. Ask Me is all about, this has to do with a person's requirement to pay union dues. And so in a historical Supreme Court case, we had Abood v. Board of Education. And in that determination, the Supreme Court decided, you know what, if you disagree, if you object to your union's participation in politics, then you don't have to pay the part of your union dues that are going to support that. But you do have to pay a fair share that goes to cover the amount for negotiating your contract and for covering you in the case of a contract violation. So what you may not know, and a lot of people will tell you, like, oh, you shouldn't have to pay. The law requires still that that union represent people that don't pay.
Right.
The union has to represent all the workers at a place of employment, or at least in that specific trade.
Yeah. Even if they're not paying their dues, they're still benefiting
still benefiting from it. So, like, if a person says, I'm not going to pay, a union can't say, well, that's fine, we're not going to represent you, and you can't free ride on our contract. No. The law says the person is still entitled to the union negotiations, wages, medical, retirement, and grievance filing assistance.
Which is one of the bigger aspects that I feel like doesn't get discussed as much, is that not only does the union provide you with benefits, but it also protects you. It supports you if you do have a grievance to file. If there's something that you not only against your coworkers, but against your employer, if you think there's wage theft or any other violation of your protections, your rights as a worker, the union comes in and goes to bat for you. And that's the kind of thing that they do for you, even if you aren't a union, a dues-paying member in these places.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, and this got me thinking, too. Like, okay, so you don't want to pay into the union that's representing you, that you're getting benefit from, because you disagree with their politics. What is the government? I mean, in the Declaration of Independence, we broke free so that we could, quote, form a more perfect union.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, there's a lot of people that disagree with the politics that go on today, and yet you still have to pay your taxes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I pay taxes, and I don't get to earmark saying, I want all this money. I don't want any of this money going towards, you know, the Pentagon budget, any sort of national security budget. I don't want any of this going towards, you know, any sort of subsidies for oil companies. I don't get to say that.
Right.
So,
yeah, you don't have choice.
Right. And not only that, but you don't even get to, if you get to elect your individual leaders, you know, that's the way that we're told we get to make change within the country is electing people who will then change the policies.
Mm-hmm.
So the same thing can reasonably be said about a union,
mm-hmm.
where if you don't like where your money is going, you don't get to just not pay, but you get to fight to get the right person elected to be in charge of where the money's going.
Right.
Yeah.
And as it turns out, unions are very good at that. And I think that's the whole reason for Janus, if you ask me, and why a lot of nonprofit black money, dark money, rich people money are supporting Janus in this case is because they want to shut down the union's ability to do that. You take away all their money, and pretty soon they can't get people out in the field mobilizing, helping people get the politicians elected that are going to represent our interests.
Yeah. I mean, it's just that one step closer to a national right to work law, or, you know, any sort of complete abolition of labor unions entirely.
Right.
This is just a step down that path.
Right. So, yeah, so we went from Abood v. Board of Education, and fast forward to now, Janus v. Ask Me, and what they're arguing under that is, you know what, this fair share is ridiculous. We don't even want to pay our fair share because unions are inherently political, mm-hmm. and therefore it violates my free speech. So we don't want to pay anything at all.
Right.
And so they were just they're just sort of waiting until they had the Supreme Court culture there where they think they might get a victory. And, you know, right now we got, well, it's 4-4 with a swing voter, but it's expected maybe that it's going to be a 5-4 decision in favor of Janus.
I mean, that's pretty disappointing. It's not, I can't say it's surprising, but it is definitely disappointing. I mean, yeah, of course, unions are, the argument that unions are inherently political and therefore you putting your money into it is mm-hmm. supporting their political activity. I mean, that's true, but the same thing is true about, you know, where you put your money. If you're buying, I mean, just as a side here, it just came out this past week, I believe, or possibly a week ago, that the company Kimberly-Clark, they do a lot of, you know, paper products. Most notably, they own Kleenex and they own Cottonelle, the toilet paper brand.
Mm-hmm.
They announced that with the tax break windfall that they're getting from this new Trump tax scam,
mm-hmm.
they're using it to basically shut down. I forget the exact number, but they're shutting down facilities in this country and they're laying off their workers. And, you know, often Americans, we're busy people. There's not a lot of time to, they're shutting down 10 factories and laying off close to 6,000 workers.
Yikes.
And, you know, you...
Who's that you say? Cottonelle?
Yeah. Cottonelle, who, you know, they're a subsidiary. Their parent company is Kimberly-Clark, which if you go into any sort of office place or any restaurant, you'll generally see the toilet paper holder or the paper towel holder is like Kimberly-Clark Professional on there.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And so, you know, we go to that restaurant. Maybe you appreciate the people who own the restaurant. Maybe they have good values and good food and they provide elements or, you know, services to your community. But they don't have a lot of options when it comes to buying paper products. So you go into there and you're supporting their purchase of that company's product. And that company is then going around and doing things that you don't support. It's the same thing that you see, you know, with where you put your money in other situations in life. So if you're complaining about in the union, you don't like where your money is going, what the dues you're paying are doing politically, then at least you have a process to redress your grievances there. You can get someone else elected to run that union.
Right.
You don't get that here. You know, you don't get to choose what the company,
By the way, the Plumbers and Pipe Fitters Union just did last month. We have a new business manager, so I've got high expectations.
Awesome. That's great. I mean, that's really.
So you're talking about Cottonelle shutting down all these factories, laying off 6,000 workers. That is a bummer because I like their product.
I know.
Unfortunately, I would gladly support the movement by using one of their competitors, but I got to say, that is rough.
And the problem with that, too, is that their competitors, you know, there's a few other toilet paper brands like Angel Soft and Quilted Northern. I mean, those are three major toilet paper brands. Those other two are owned by Georgia-Pacific, who is a subsidiary of Koch Industries, owned by the Koch brothers,
Charles and
David. And so that's, you know, they're narrowing down our ability to even do something as simple as buy toilet paper.
Right.
Because these major capitalists own all these entities and they don't give us much choice, you know.
Maybe we got to start making toilet paper, man. What do you think? I think I found a
revolutionary
plan for
toilet
us.
Paper.
Yeah, exactly.
The people's toilet
RTP.
Paper.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's the wave of the future there. Or just buy bidets, I guess.
Right. So, you know, and it's not all gloom and doom. There's a lot of good stuff going on in the labor movement. It's just frustrating that the decisions right now are coming down to 9 people that I feel, you know, not any of them are really in tune with the working class anymore. They've got a lifelong appointment to a court where they just make decisions for us, but don't, you know, they're not affected.
Right.
They're super wealthy.
And one of the scariest things about it, too, right now is, I mean, if you just look at, obviously, there's a laundry list of scary things that the Trump administration is doing. But one of the ones that isn't getting covered enough and that will have some of the longest lasting effects is their appointment of judges up and down our judicial system that are going to have lifetime appointments that will be there long after he's in jail and all of his, you know, whatever happens with this current administration.
Yeah.
Long outlive their relevance in our political system.
Yeah, and he knows it. He advertised that at the State of the Union address that they've appointed more judges than anybody before him.
Right. I mean, it's terrifying, and it's going to have lasting effects throughout, you know, our lives and our children's lives. What these partisan judges are going to be ruling on,
right?
At all levels. Yeah. So that, you know. That's a little bit of sunshine right there.
So, anyways, the Janus decision that's expected to be due out by June.
Okay.
So we'll have more information to talk about on that in a couple of months.
Have to keep an eye on that.
Yeah.
There is a little bit of, I mean, if we're actually, you know, talking about the negative sides of attacks on labor, there is a positive right now, and it's not that far away from here in Portland, Oregon. Oh. We have up in Seattle, the workers at their local public radio station KUOW. Have just voted to unionize, and so that's pretty exciting. It's the first time in the station's history that their workers will be unionized.
Oh.
And so that's, you know,
wonderful.
It's probably, I don't know the exact number of workers that they have. I think they have somewhere between 50 and 60 employees at the station. But,
okay.
I mean, hey, that's a major start.
It is.
Seattle is definitely a very radical place right now, and it's not surprising that their public radio station would be the one to take this step. But that, you know, there's a list of other media stations that have unionized workforces, like public radio stations. There's WBEZ in Chicago, WNYC in New York, a few other ones. But It's pretty exciting. They'll be represented by SAG-AFTRA, which is AFTRA, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know,
Screen Actors Guild, exactly. American Federation of Radio, Television, and whatever.
Radio, Television, Actors, Screen Actors, Film, Television, Radio.
That's right.
Yeah, either way. Yeah, you are 100% right, and that's, you know, bravo. Good job, brothers and sisters. That's great.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so that's just a little bit of sunshine there.
So also going on up in Seattle now, Amazon's got their store open, Amazon Go. So you walk in with your cell phone, you get your app opened up, and now they know who you are, and you just go around and load up your grocery cart, and you walk right out.
It's pretty simple.
Yeah, that's it, and they'll just bill it right to your Amazon account. You don't have to check out, you don't have to scan anything. They're confident enough that their cameras and sensors will detect everything right. That you put in your cart, that if you get one past them, they said it's on them.
How generous of them. Thank you, Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, right?
One of the things that, you know, so they have that, and that's on the consumer side, that seems like a pretty amazing step forward. You don't have to wait in a checkout line. There is a downside to it, though, and it is very much class-based.
Mm.
If you are someone who uses food stamps, you cannot use those on products in their store. You cannot use food stamps to purchase anything at the Amazon Go store. And, you know, it may be an extra step on the part of Amazon to link in with, since there is no actual swiping of a card.
Right.
But it seems like you could link your account, your Amazon account to run, you know, at least whatever products would be covered under your food stamps.
Yes.
There should be a way to make that work, and it seems very classist to not allow that.
Yeah, in a system where every single item is computer-coded and computerized so that it can be scanned when you walk out, it seems like it'd be very easy to flag it as SNAP or EBT
exactly,
covered
yeah.
or not.
That's
too bad.
Yeah,
but I wonder, you know, it surprises me that Amazon wouldn't, because that's one of Walmart's models for doing business. They pay all their workers so little that they're able to collect food stamps, but they're also so cheap that those workers end up using the food stamps at Walmart, so they're double dipping on the system.
Oh, yeah. I mean, talk about welfare queens right there.
You know? Oh, yeah. And so, you know, I mean, there's a lot of money. You know, it's not just a couple of quote, welfare queens. There's a lot of people that are going through hard times that qualify for food assistance. And so Amazon obviously would want to benefit from that. So,
especially considering that they, you know, on the corporate side, they do pay fairly well, it's competitive wages. But
right.
on the fulfillment side, you know, the more blue collar worker side, they do not
right.
pay very well.
No, they sure don't.
Like
and we talked about a court case before where they're required to be held up at a security checkpoint before
right.
they can leave, and they don't have to be paid for that time.
Yeah, and it may take 30 minutes to get through that security line like it does at the airport,
and longer at Christmas time. They said,
of course, where you have more, you know, short term workers. And just to tie it into that, I mean, so right now it was just announced this week that despite the fact that Amazon is in fact hunting, you know, they're basically forcing cities to compete and bribe them
right.
to get the Amazon, the second headquarters in their city.
Right.
They are at the same time laying off workers at their Seattle corporate headquarters. You know, it's not mm-hmm. a huge number of workers, but there are some Amazon workers being laid off, not from the blue-collar side, but from the white-collar side.
I thought of a great solution to this, because it's a big problem that cities are courting companies
right.
to come, and they offer them all sorts of fabulous multi-billion dollar breaks. I mean, didn't Intel get something like $100 billion over a period of time?
They called a special session of the Oregon
right.
legislature to make that
right.
happen, too.
Now, I like Intel.
You do, yeah.
I do a lot of work at Intel, so I benefit
Correct.
From that. However, if I was any competitor to Intel, I would feel that was very unfair. So I came up with a solution. I think anytime they give one outfit a tax break to locate there, they have to give the same tax break to everybody. And then, you know, if the city says, you know what, we got enough money, we can do this, and it's going to be good for everyone, yeah, let's do it. But if it's a case where one outfit is donating a lot of money to get a politician elected, and they're like, oh, great, we're going to make sure you don't have to pay any taxes, well, that's, you know, there's obviously a conflict of interest there, and that ain't right.
Right.
So if it's good for one, it's good for all, I say.
And, you know, even conversely with that, or similar to that, you know, if you're going to provide that sort of subsidy or tax break to
mm-hmm.
the company, then maybe part of it would be then you also provide similar tax breaks to the workers who then get jobs at that company or to workers in the area, you know, something
Absolutely.
Like that to benefit people.
Absolutely.
I think, yeah, I mean, it's it seems
you give shocking. you give a company a property tax break, you should give residents a property tax break.
Yeah, an income tax break for, you know, if they don't have to pay payroll tax or something like that, make sure that the worker sees benefit from that.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, because workers are the ones that will prop an economy up. You know, rich people are only buying so many beds, so many pillows, so many cars. Well, maybe they buy more cars. Right. I know if I had a lot of money, I'd buy some cool cars.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, well, actually, I guess we're running a little bit short on time, but we still have a few minutes left.
Tell me about the tips.
Yeah, sorry.
No, go ahead. I want to hear more about the tips, because I would be frustrated if I worked for tips and my boss kept them.
Yeah, so one of the things that, you know, is getting less coverage than most things, again, most of the things that get coverage within the Trump administration are not exactly pressing. I mean, although they are important, they are not the most pressing things that affect workers. One of the things that is not getting covered is a proposal by the Trump administration's labor officials to basically change the laws for how employers of tipped workers get to distribute the tips that they get. And basically they're saying that companies that allow and I'll pull up the exact information here, but companies that have tipped workers, you know, if they allow them to pool the tips as opposed to just each individual collecting the tips, which most workplaces with service workers do, you pool the tips and then you spread it out evenly.
Yeah, especially any place like Starbucks, right, where you just drop a dollar or two into the tub.
Yeah. And so basically what they're going to do is they're going to abolish the regulation that affirms that tips are the property of the employee who earned them, and therefore they're open to exploitation. By, you know, essentially they're opening it up so that the employer can then say, okay, because they are no longer your property because you collected this tip, they are now the property of us, the employer. When you pull them, we take this money and we will divvy it out as we see fit, potentially even keeping some for themselves, which is outrageous if you consider the fact that a lot of service workers who do rely on tips, there are exemptions in those industries for those employers to pay the employee less than minimum wage because it's supposedly made up for with the tips that they make.
Right.
And so if you are saying this is a situation where the employer gets the right to pay their employee less than minimum wage, and then when they make the tips that are supposed to make up the difference, they then get to keep a portion or a majority of those tips.
All right.
So that's pretty insane. And unfortunately, we are running up against the clock here.